Perhaps there was an idea that there was a ceiling on him. I don't see it, unfortunately for us. But he's great for them, and he's great for our league.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We're going to be looking back at the action from Sunday, previewing Monday's games for DFS and also having a look at the week ahead. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Of course, I've already discussed the Trevor Ariza, Kelly Oubre, Austin Rivers deal. I released a bonus short 12-15 minute podcast across the weekend, so go check that out. And the best way to make sure you don't miss any episodes, including special episodes like that or the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Fast Break shows, is to subscribe to this podcast. So go ahead and do that. We will start this show where we do with all the shows with
monstrous line of the night.
It goes to Johnny Wall of the Washington Wizards. Wall was instrumental as the Wizards blew out the Lakers. He had 40 points along with 4 triples, 6 rebounds, 14 assists. That's huge. 3 steals and 2 blocks and did it on 59% shooting, 16 of 27 from the field. The 4 of 6 from the line's not that great, and he's been a bit of a disappointment in terms of his free throws this season, but Wall is still the 23rd overall ranked player. You could have got him around that time in drafts. The thing that's really holding him back from being maybe a top 17 guy is the free throws. He's at 67% this year. He was 73 last year, 80 the year before, 79 the year before that, 79 the year before that. But it appears, like so many players, weirdly, that their free throws have taken a permanent regression and they're just never going to return. And I don't know what that is. It's Russell Westbrook. It's Andrew Wiggins. It's John Wall. There are players who are dropping, you know, 10, 11 percentage points and never recovering. And I don't know what could possibly be the cause of Wall's sudden decline here. But we're still getting big numbers out of John, 21.5 points with 9 assists, 1.6 steals, and that can really push back up, especially as over the last 5 games, we've seen his assists go back into that double-digit zone, which is, you know, really the key factor in Wall's fantasy value. So he is starting to trend in the right direction in those areas. We just would like those free throws to come back. It has been quite a weird scenario, in my opinion, just the way that so many of these players, I don't get it. If anyone's got an idea as to why this stuff is going on with these players, please let me know. I'd like to know why we're seeing these big drop downs in numbers. But Johnny Wall is your monstrous line of the night for Sunday.
Waiver wire line of the night.
It goes to Nemanja Bjelica of the Sacramento Kings. We know that Marvin Bagley is out for the next week to 10 days with a bone bruise. So Bjelica played 35 minutes and had 15 and 10. 4 triples, 4 blocks. He had an assist as well. We know that he was an excellent option at the beginning of the season. In fact, he's still the 74th ranked player over the course of this season, but over the last month, that's dipped down to be the number 100 ranked player, which is still okay, but it's not as good as where he was to begin the season as his minutes have started to come back down. But recently, the minutes have trended up. His efficiency is still sky high. He was a 46% shooter last year. He's at 54% this season, and it's not really declining because he literally cannot miss from three. And by literally, I mean figuratively. He's at 49% from deep this season, and every sort of split, he's just continuing to shoot at this really high rate, and that's keeping his field goal percentage elevated, which is by far his number one fantasy category this season, and that's what's keeping him as a relevant player. So for now, he is an add in 12-team leagues for the short term. That's why you have that streaming spot to add a short-term guy who can provide top 50 value for a week to 10 days while Bagley is out. And then when Bagley gets back up to speed, Jaeger won't come in and play Bagley 30 minutes a night coming back from a knee injury. We saw that with his back injury already, that he'll play him 21, 22, and Bjelica will get 24, 25. And as long as Bjelica's efficiency stays up, then he can be a valuable player, even when those guys are sharing minutes. But there is still, I have an element of concern that he won't be a 48% three-point shooter, of course, because nobody really is. And that will dip a lot of his value down. But as long as Bagley is sidelined, I think Nemanja definitely has some appeal and can be a 12-team league short-term add. Got to tell you about the sponsors of today's show, and that is the guys over at Pure Tanica. Pure Tanica provides shampoo and conditioner, which is a great experience to luxuriate your head. I love the Pure Tanica Cool Bliss shampoo and conditioner that I have, that beautiful menthol smell, that minty freshness that you get It's not only does it smell good, but it just feels, it gets your scalp tingling, and it's a great feeling whether you're doing it in the morning to get you sort of pumped up to go about your day, or to do it after the day is over, wash all that crap out of your hair, and get that, I guess the blood flow going back to your scalp, get the nerves re-energized, that's not the right word, energized, and Puritanica Cool Bliss Shampoo and Conditioner is a great way of doing that. You can go and find Puritanica at Amazon.com, or you can go to Puritanica.com, and you can get free US shipping by using the promo code BASKETBALL. Go ahead and do that. Everyone can use it. It helps with dry scalp, helps with dandruff, helps with thinning hair, which would be a great option for you guys. It's reasonably priced and it is a fantastic product, and I can't speak highly enough of Puritanica Cool Bliss Shampoo and Conditioner. So go to Puritanica.com and use that promo code BASKETBALL for free US shipping. Let's move on now to the deep leaguer of the day. It goes to Thomas Bryant of the Washington Wizards, who looks like he's going to be locked in as the starting center for probably the rest of this season, depending on when Dwight Howard returns, of course. I know Dwight's not out for now. Dwight could be out for the rest of the season. He's not at this point, but Bryant for now is that guy. He played 28 minutes tonight, which is a high for him. 8 points, 11 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal and 2 blocks. He's a guy I've talked about quite a bit as a deep league guy to watch. He had a pretty good season last season with South Bay in the G League as a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. He's a shot blocking, rebounding, 3-point shooting, energy type big man. And we've seen it in flashes here. Rostered in only 2% of leagues. I would look into him as a 20-team league guy. I might even look a little bit shallower just because he's got this consistent sort of a role with that ability to block shots, which can be pretty tough to get. And over the last month, he's a top 180 player in only 17 minutes per night. And over the last 2 weeks, Thomas Bryant's a top 150 player. So that 2% rostered number is significantly low, meaning 18-teamers, 16-teamers, shit, 14-team leagues. I think you have to pay attention to him and have a look, because that ability to block shots with high efficiency, hit some threes, grab some rebounds, can be really useful for your team, and he's available on nearly every waiver wire, and not many top 150 players are 98% available, and Thomas Bryant is that over the last 2 weeks as he starts to get more comfortable, the team gets more comfortable with him, and he starts to assert himself as an NBA rotation player, as a starter on the Washington Wizards, so he is your deep leaguer of the night.
Young gun of the night.
It goes to De'Aaron Fox of the Sacramento Kings. Foxy was great once again in a big victory on the road over the Dallas Mavericks. 33 minutes, 28 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and a block on 58% shooting and a perfect 6 of 6 from the free throw line. Fox has been a huge surprise this season, the 34th ranked player over the course of the season. He's taken his efficiency up significantly, 10 percentage point rise in his true shooting, up from 48 to 58% there. The free throw is still not fantastical, though. He's at 79% there from over the last month, which is an improvement. But it's the 48% from the field, the 40% from three. I still think that there's an element of regression coming there with some of his mid-range shooting. But 7.5 assists, the high usage, the 1.6 steals, I think all of that is relatively expected for Fox. And things that should be able to continue. If that efficiency dips, then maybe he goes back to being that player who's the 50th best player, not the 35th, which isn't a significant drop off, but it's enough. It's enough that we have to mention it, or that I feel like I have to mention it in terms of how I could see him potentially dropping. But I still think that he's fantastic and providing great value from a guy that you drafted with a last pick in the draft, or around that area, which is where he was going at about 120. I grabbed him in quite a few leagues. I think if I look now, I've got him in 4 of my redraft leagues this season, so I'm pretty happy about getting him in those ones, returning a significant chunk of value for me this season, even if those free throws can be a little bit dicey. But as I mentioned, that seems to have improved over that last month or so, and pushing up towards 48 and 80 are pretty strong percentage numbers for De'Aaron Fox as he continues his charge towards establishing himself as a real star in the NBA. And I wasn't certain that he was necessarily going to get there at this point last season, or even at the end of last season, but he's taking significant steps forward, and couldn't be happier for the guy who's putting up those really, really strong numbers. I tell a man's not hot. This is absolutely 100% a first. The dud of the night is
LeBron James.
I didn't think it'd ever happen, but LeBron is your dud of the night. 32 minutes for LeBron, 13, 6, and 3. Now, that's not a terrible line. But he didn't hit a three. He had one block. He had no steals. He was 3 of 6 from the line, which is bad. He was 5 of 16 from the field, which is bad. And when I'm giving the dud of the night, I'm looking for players, the worst performance from a player who's rostered in 70% of leagues or above. So there were clearly players who performed worse than him. His teammate Josh Hart was worse, but he's not rostered in 70% of leagues. So LeBron, who's honestly, the rankings for LeBron at the moment, they're not great. He is struggling. He is the 10th overall player for the season, but 26th over the last 2 weeks, as his assist numbers have taken that hit, but it's that free throws. Under 60% over the last 2 weeks on 8 attempts per game is significant. Now, if you're punting free throws, he's back being a first-round guy, but if you weren't thinking that heading into the season drafting LeBron, then you're in a bit of trouble. Last season, he had a Z score in his free throws of -1. This season, he's at -1.83, but over the last month, -3, and that is very, very tough to come back from. Pair that with his assist rate dropping, his steal rate dropping, his block rate dropping, his rebound rate dropping. Now, there's been a significant decline from LeBron, not saying it's necessarily all him, but it's partly him, it's partly the Lakers system. There were people drafting him at pick 3 or pick 2. I saw some people taking him at pick 1 in fantasy drafts, and that was complete nonsense in my opinion. And he was that guy at the back end of the first round, which is exactly where he sits at the moment. But it's been sliding back. I don't know if you're ever going to be able to extract a buy low scenario out of LeBron James because he's LeBron James. But if you're going to do it, now's the time to do it. We don't often see LeBron's numbers or fantasy rank at least slide as much as it has over the last couple of weeks, especially this week where he's outside the top 80. So that would be your time to pounce. But I think this is history making with LeBron James being the dud of the night. The plus minus GOATs, the best net rating of the day went to Landry Shamet of the Philadelphia 76ers. He was a plus 76.6, while the lowest net rating went to Alec Burks of the Cleveland Cavaliers, minus 93.6. Burks is that guy who I talked about ad nauseum, and he had a couple of strong games for the Cavs, and people thought, oh, now he's into a different system now. He's going to have a big opportunity. And in general, and it doesn't happen always, but after 5 years, a guy just is who he is, and I think we're seeing that with Burks. He has these momentary flashes, and in the end, he's just not that good. And I think we look at him as a clear not 12-team rosterable guy and probably not even a 14-team league player who is really struggling, and he's starting to lose minutes despite the fact that he is the starting shooting guard with the Cleveland Cavaliers at this present time. Let's look at some injury news now. I talked about Bagley already, bone bruise in that knee out for 7 to 10 days. Bielitsa is the out. I thought Harry Giles would get some playing time. He didn't. It was Troy Williams and Justin Jackson as the Kings went extra small. That's only deeper league sort of stuff. Kyle Lowry missed today's game along with Pascal Siakam. Both of those injuries don't appear to be too serious for the Raptors. Markieff Morris left today's action with a neck strain. He didn't return to the game. That also doesn't appear to be too serious. If he misses time, then Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
He's the guy that you look to fill that void, although Trevor Ariza will likely be joining the team for the next game, and that could complicate that rotation somewhat. While late in the Pelicans' loss to the Heat, Julius Randle sprained his ankle. He wasn't able to return, and he hasn't officially been ruled out of Wednesday's game, but Alvin Gentry said he'd doubt that he'd play Wednesday. He is day-to-day, but unlikely to play on Wednesday. We've also got Nikola Mirotic, who's questionable for the Pelicans, so that's going to open up some minutes in that front court if both of those guys have to miss Wednesday. I would imagine that Mirotic plays Wednesday and Randle is out, and it still gives that back-end value to Diallo and to Darius Miller, but Mirotic isn't going to come in and play 37 minutes in the first game back from his second ankle sprain, so there could be some short-term value appearing there for the Pelicans, but of course, we'd be looking at Wednesday. Action where there is quite a few games and which might make it a little bit harder to stream in or add either of those players. If you are on Instagram or on Twitter, which of course you are, you need to be following the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net. All the hosts merged into one feed over on Twitter. So you get all the breaking news, injury reports, rotation, lineup decisions, all that stuff on one feed. And then on Instagram, the biggest stories of the day on Instagram stories, plus all our regular stuff on the regular Instagram feed. That's Locked On NBA Net on both Twitter and on Instagram. Let's move on now to these games. We'll talk about them in a bit more detail. We've got only the 7 games to talk about from today's action. So let's get into the first one of those. It was the earlier game of the day. The Brooklyn Nets really smacking down on the Atlanta Hawks, 144 to 127. Let's talk about the Undertaker. Dwayne Dedman played 32 minutes. He had 24 and 12, hit 5 triples, 3 assists, a steal, and a block. He is a must-add player in 12-team leagues. He's pushed the Alex Len challenge to the side. He's pushing up towards 28 to 29 minutes a night at the moment. The steal rate's through the roof, and prior to today, his block numbers and his field goal percentage were low, but those are going to normalize when the steals come back down, and he should be a top 100 feature for the rest of the season, a must-roster player. Trey Young had 13 and 10. Yeah, not too bad, pretty decent. Well, the Baptist had 29 and 8. John Collins is crushing it at the moment. Well, Kent Bazemore continues to be a must-roster player until Taurean Prince returns. 20 points with 7 assists and 3 steals from Bazemore. He has been fantastic replacing Prince. He'd been a really interesting defensive-type stats streamer in that bench role prior, and he'll probably go back to being that when Prince returns. Now, Kevin Huerta, a guy who was extraordinarily highly ranked over the last couple of weeks, he had a real stinker. 4 points in 28 minutes, but I believe that Huerta is a 12-team league must-roster player. I think that the numbers are going to be... There's going to be ups and downs, no doubt, but the overall value that he provides will be close to top 100 around that mark for the rest of the season, and that will continue to get better as the season goes on. DeAndre Bembry had a nice and well-rounded game. 4 assists, 2 steals, and a block, but that's more special streaming and deeper league sort of stuff. For the Nets, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, just the 23 minutes for Rondae, but 18 points with 4 rebounds and 2 steals. Good to see his last couple of games being a bit stronger. I think he's on the periphery of 12-team as well. D'Angelo Russell had 32, 6, and 7 after a couple of slow games. Jared Allen got into foul trouble. That's why he played only 15 minutes. Still had 11 and 4 with 2 blocks, but now is the time to approach whoever has Jared Allen and try a buy low, because I've had multiple people, should I drop Jared Allen? Do I panic on Jared Allen? And if people are asking it, that means someone who has him in your league might be thinking the same thing. I'm not overly worried about Allen. He's not reaching some of the heights we thought he may this season, but he's still solid enough, and if someone is willing to consider dropping him, then they might be willing to consider, if you throw your worst 2 players at him in a trade, that you can get him back. So I'd be looking to do that. Rowdy Rodions Kurucs played 28 minutes in a start, 11, 6, and 4. He started for Alan Crabman. I think he's going to be really good, this guy. I think there's a chance that by the end of this season, he's already better than Alan Crabb. Now, when Crabb returns, he probably moves back to the bench, but I'd feel pretty stunned if he wasn't a rotation player. That makes him a deeper league guy, but I like his top 100 upside for dynasty leagues. Well, Joe Harris, his ball handling and passing continues to impress me. 16, 1, and 6. I think you have to look at him as a 12-team league guy at this point as well, because he's adding extra things to his game. Previously, he was just a 3-point streamer, but he is adding these other things, and he's establishing himself as a really strong presence on this Brooklyn team. So shout out to Smoke and Joe. Next up, we go to the Philadelphia 76ers. They beat the Cleveland Cavaliers pretty comfortably, 128-105. Benny Simmons, triple-double, 22, 11, and 14. Well, Jim Butler, general soreness, he returned from his groin strain, 19-2-2. He hit 3 threes. He had a steal and a block. You couldn't really ask for too much better than that coming back from that groin injury. With him coming back, that meant that Furkan Korkmaz shifted back to the bench, 22 minutes for Furk, 2-5-2 on 1-of-6 shooting. So that little run that he had, which was really strong, you can move on and consider him a deeper league guy only. While Baby Neck Wilson Chandler had 11-7 with 2 blocks, he is more of a 14-16 team league player. Now, Landry Shamet, one of the best 3-point streamers around, hit another 4 of those today to go to 16 points with a block on 6-of-7 shooting. His ability to come in as a rookie and just be this knockdown 3-point threat has been impressive. He's hitting almost 2 threes per game at 41%, consistently doing it. He's the only ranked 250th this season because he's not doing really anything in any other area, but getting a reliable source of threes from a player is what Shamet's doing, and that's obviously useful. With Butler back, TJ McConnell's value dipped a bit. He still played 24 minutes and had 8 points with 5 assists and 2 steals, but Butler only played 25. So when Jim goes back to 35, 10 minutes have to come from somewhere. So probably 5 off TJ, 5 off Furkan, and that eliminates a lot of both of their values. On the Cavs, Matty Dellavedova, what is going on here? 13 points in 22 minutes, 7 assists and a steal. Now, he's rostered in only 3% of leagues, and I'm not suggesting that he is a 12-team league player, but he's a 16-team league player at the moment. With how they're utilizing him, he's doing more for this team than what George Hill was. I think that we look at Dally as a deeper league option now, and he wasn't even really a 20-team league guy in Milwaukee, but back in Cleveland, he's fitting in seamlessly, and he's putting up good numbers. Jordan Clarkson, 18, 6, and 4, was strong in this one as well. I think he's probably a 12-team league player over someone like Burks, while the Padawan, Colin Sexton, 12 points, 2 assists, and 2 steals, continues just to be not a good fantasy player. The points can be okay, and he scores in double digits, but overall, this line is just not a good fantasy line. The two steals you'll take, he's low in threes, low in rebounds, low in assists, doesn't get many steals usually, doesn't block. Efficiency's been much better than anticipated. I still believe he is a 12-team league player, but he's not a good fantasy guy. Chetty Osman, 18-4 in 35 minutes. This is the Chetty that we hope for in the preseason and the start of the season. I'm off him at the moment, and I wouldn't be rushing to go grab him in this one. Well, David Nwaba continues to impress. Now, he's not going to be a top 150 or probably even top 200 player, but I think what we'll see is he'll start to cut into the playing time of guys like Jerome Blossomgame and maybe even Alec Burks. Well, Larry Nance, after being really successful the last two games, Larry drew him, and he played only 26 minutes, 7-4-6, so the production's still there, and I still look at him as a must-roster guy, but man, is Drew going to continue to dick around here? It's a real worry. Ante Zizic started over Channing Frye, played 17 minutes and had 7-2. That's really just deeper league stuff for Zizic. He's going to be a more valuable player than Frye, though, so he can have some deep league value in that scenario. The New York Knicks lost to the Indiana Pacers, 110-99. Big game from Enes Kanter, 20-15 in 36 minutes. It's all just about the minutes for Kanter and how much he plays. While Hardaway had 19-2-3. And Noah Vonleh, 7-12 with 3 assists. Just solid numbers. His percentages are a bit up and down. He's shooting the 3 quite well this season, but only 30% from the field here. His block numbers have been up and they're a little bit down at the moment. But he's got that fringe 12-team league value. Consider along the lines of like a Derek Favors, Cody Zeller type of a big man with limited upside who could be on and off rosters all season. Manuel Mudiay. Man, I didn't think that I'd have to talk about this guy that much this season. 18 points, 6 assists. Trey Burke was back. Mudiay still played 30 minutes. I think at this point we have to consider Mudiay close to a 12-team must-add. I'm not quite there as must-add for him, because I don't know what Fizdale will do. He could go back to 23 minutes when Burke is fully healthy from that knee injury. But for now, it's looking good for Mudiay. As for the Fort Kevin Knox, he is the taller version of Colin Sexton. 15 points with 3 triples and 2 steals. So it did help in some of the peripheral numbers, but missed both his free throws. Poor percentages. Overall, a negative fantasy guy who probably should be a 12-team league player. But you have to watch for those negatives that he does have. And he's not a big contributor in those peripheral categories. Nil Aquino, only the 18 minutes, 3-2-4. Onto the Pacers, a big victory on the Depot night, 26-8-7, 5 steals and 5 triples. This is what we expected from, or what we hoped from him at the beginning of the season. While Miles Turner, the rebounds have dipped with Oladipo back, but still 24-6 with 2 blocks on sky-high usage, 29% usage, not something that he normally does. He's normally a 20% usage player, so a little bit inflated. While Thad Young's hot run dropped off, 10-6 in 32 minutes. I'd still hold him. I just wouldn't expect that run of 20-10 games that he was having to be able to continue really under any circumstances. Well, Darren Collison got into foul trouble, only played 17 minutes and had 3-3-5. It might seem presumptuous to cut him. I'm happy to do it. He was shit before Oladipo got hurt. The two games since Oladipo came back, one of them in foul trouble, he was not good. I think that there's a pretty clear pattern establishing there for Daz Collison that you can move on from him. If there is, again, you never just drop someone because I'm dropping him. You drop him because there's someone out there who's consistently better or clearer upside or fits what you need to do more. You don't just drop someone and go, well, I showed him a lesson. Now I've got an empty roster spot. Or I dropped him and now I've added Doug McDermott. Like, you don't do those sort of things. You do it for a purpose, but he should be that guy that when you're looking at someone, go, bang, who am I adding? Ah, Collison, you're out. The next game, a blowout by the Wizards, 128-110 over the Los Angeles Lakers. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was strong here, 25-6-5 with 4 triples. He hasn't been all that consistent this season. I don't really believe in him as this strong stash guy because people think that he was going to get traded. Remember, that was going to be part of that Trevor Ariza deal, which, as in general, when we hear the details of a trade that aren't mentioned by Woj or Shams, are pushing towards the final conclusions of a deal, that means that trade has been discussed and is done. Caldwell-Pope is just going to go back to being an irrelevant 3-point streamer. 2 big games in a row from Lonzo Ball. He exceeded the Richie Beno. He had 10-5-4 with 2 threes, 3 steals, and 2 blocks. That's coming off his weekend triple-double as well. He has been massive. Now, I don't know what's going to happen when Rajon Rondo returns. There's a massive chance that Walton screws it up, but the Lakers really haven't missed Rondo, I don't believe, and Ball, he's really playing himself into form. Of course, he is a must-roster player. While the future MVP, I'll continue to say that he is a sell-high guy. 20-6 in 29 minutes. He will be impacted by Ingram's return. I'm pretty confident in that. Flame, Flaming Mo Wagner, 17 minutes for Mo, 12 points with 2 triples, shot the ball well. He got into the game here because JaVale McGee was out with those flu-like symptoms, but he showed a little bit here as a shooting big man. I don't really see too much from him. I don't really massively like him long-term, but it was good to see him having an impact. Well, Josh the Hitman Hart, 4 points in 21 minutes with only a block, not a good night, and he was a guy that we added when Ingram went down, and now you just move on from him. He's not doing anything in this time, and Ingram's not that far away from returning. On to the Wizards. Hard to get a full understanding of what's going to happen with this team because Oubre and Rivers were out, and Ariza wasn't there yet, so minutes were jacked up all over the place, and then Markieff Morris left this game with an injury as well, and Otto Porter was out, so we had Thomas Satoransky playing 46 minutes. He had 11, 4, and 5 with 3 steals, but as I've talked about on the trade show I did across the weekend on Locked On NBA, the Wizards have no one in the backcourt. They have Wall, they have Beal, they have Satoransky. That's it. There's no other guard. So Thomas is going to have to be logging at 20-plus minutes a night. That makes him more of a 14-team league guy than a 12, but this was encouraging. Beal had 25 and 12, and Sam Decker, out of nowhere for Slammin' Sammy, 22 minutes, 25 and 4 with 3 steals. We've seen him have these occasional weird blow-ups earlier in the season with Cleveland. Again, no Porter, no Ariza, no Morris, and that gifted a lot more minutes to Decker, and the production was nice. I liked him when he was in Houston. He's never really lived up to what some of the expectations I had for him, and I wouldn't be overreacting to this one too much. Jeff Green also had a big game with all those injuries, 20 and 7 with 4 triples in 33 minutes, but that's not going to be able to stick when all those guys return. We're talking about 3 heavy minute sort of players, Morris, Porter, and Ariza, that have to come into this lineup at some point. Very soon, I'd expect. The Kings and the Mavericks, Bielitsa and Fox, we've talked about already. Budrick Hield had 28 points. I don't think he scored for the entire fourth quarter, but had 3 triples as well. Strong from him, while Cauley Stein played 32 minutes and had 12 and 8. And Bogdan Bogdanovic, 37 minutes for Bogdan, replacing Iman Shumpert as the starter. There's no reason why he shouldn't remain as the starter, but Jaeger will go back, put him on the bench, and cut 3 or 4 minutes off his playing time to get Shumpert in there. Bogdan had 15, 7, and 5. And even if he's starting or coming off the bench, he's a must-roster player. Justin Jackson did what he does, and that's nothing. 6 points in 23 minutes, while Yogi Ferrell, in the stretch of his whatever this 10-game audition is here. 8 points with 3 assists for Ferrell. After that strong first game, he's provided exactly what he is, and that's nothing. That's a bit harsh on Yogi. He's not nothing, but he's not a good fantasy option. On to the Mavericks. Doncic had 28, 6, and 9. That's a good game from him. While DeAndre Jordan, 23 boards, and probably the biggest shock is the fact that he had 3 blocks.
A surprise, to be sure, but a welcome one.
That's just not what you get from DeAndre Jordan at this point in his career. Matthews had 13 points with 4 assists and 2 steals. He's a fringe 12 streamer, while with J.J. Barea and Dennis Smith Jr. out the burner, Jalen Brunson played 30 minutes, had 12, 4, and 3. That's 3 out of the 4 starts that he's made where he's been successful. I think he moves into a Barea role 2 or 3 years down the track and can be that fringe 14 to 12 team league player. He just likely goes back out of the rotation, though, where both of those guys return. Well, Dirk Nowitzki is back. 8 minutes, 3 points. He is not going to be a fantasy factor, really, in any sort of league this season. I don't believe. I could be wrong, but it doesn't feel that way with the way that Dirk is moving. Would be a stretch of the word moving to say the way he's getting up and down the court. The Miami Heat with a big road win over the New Orleans Pelicans, 102-96. Joshy Richardson was back in this one, 22 points, 4 assists, and 3 steals. Good to see him back in action. Well, Justice Winslow started for Goran Dragic and then suffered from some ankle soreness and wasn't able to return. Now, the Heat don't play for another 3 days, so Winslow should be okay. I don't believe he's anywhere near a 12-team league player at this point. Well, Kelly Olynyk, the minutes continue to rise. 32 minutes for Olynyk, 8 and 6. Didn't shoot the ball well, but he is a 12-team league player at this point. Well, Hassan Whiteside only played 23 minutes, but 17 and 12 with 3 blocks, while Bam Adebayo played 25 and had 5, 8, and 5. Now, I would hold Bam for now, but he took 2 shot attempts. He had 1 block. He was okay, but he's not this top 50 guy in 22 or 23 minutes a night. He's just not that guy. And in 10-team leagues, you'll likely find better than Adebayo around. In 12-team leagues, it will all depend on, hey, who's available? Who am I adding for? But you know, Whiteside's back, and Bam's not starting and playing 30 minutes a night, as I mention on this show pretty often. For the Pelicans, Tone Davis, 27, 12, and 7. Another big assist night from Davis to go with 2 triples, 3 steals, and 3 blocks, while Holiday had 22 with 4 assists and 3 steals as well. Randall 17 and 10 before that ankle injury, while Solly Hill, one of his better offensive games with 10 points, and Darius Miller played 31 minutes for a grand total of 3 points on 1 of 9 shooting. Timmy Frazier, the assist specialist, played 12 minutes. He wasn't good. Aaron Harrison took a lot of his minutes. We saw Frank Jackson in there, Drew Holiday handling the point. With Elfrid Payton probably a week or two away, Frazier's value is going to completely disappear. You can ride it out now, but if you're going to look a little bit more long-term, then he is, of course, an expendable player with a pretty well-defined shelf life of how long he's going to be useful for. Games like this, of course, don't help his cause. The last game of the night, the Toronto Raptors and the Denver Nuggets, just a game marred by injuries. The Raptors lose to the Nuggets 95-86. There was no Fred VanVleet, Jonas Valanciunas, Kyle Lowry, or Pascal Siakam. While, of course, for Denver, no Isaiah Thomas, Will Barton, Gary Harris, or Paul Millsap. Kawhi had 29-14, and DeLon Wright got the start with both VanVleet and Lowry out. He had 15-8-4. Now, Wright's playing mainly as a small forward shooting guard this season, minutes in the teens. He's a restricted free agent at the end of this season. So in Dynasty League, we've seen him in starting roles be really useful. He did it again today. He was pretty strong. If someone offers him a decent contract, he'd be a better point guard than what they've got happening in New York. He'd be someone that maybe you look in Miami with Goran Dragic really dropping off. Could he be a guy there? Imagine him running things in Orlando. He's a very interesting Dynasty target, I believe, DeLon Wright. Dan Green had 7-5, while CJ Miles started for Siakam and had 6-4. Wasn't a great night for CJ as he hit 2 of his 12 shots. Both of those shots were triples, and he had 2 steals. So I guess he's a steals and threes streamer, so he did his job there. But those injuries to Siakam and Lowry and VanVleet aren't considered long-term or serious, so very little value to be extracted out of CJ Miles there, while Greggy Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
4-4 in 13 minutes for Greg. Jokic had 26-9 with 4 assists, and Jamal Murray 19-5, while Monty Morris continues to be impressive.
Oh my.
12-4-4, 2 steals and 2 blocks. Now, Will Barton is about 7 to 10 days away, and that means Morris's value is going to keep up for that time. Harris will still be out, Thomas will still be out, Millsap will still be out. So Morris is a short-term flyer. Now, I'd consider him... I'd probably have him over Tim Frazier, to be honest, if I was looking at guys for the short term as to which guy I'd want to have. But Morris has got that short term value. Juancho Hernangómez was a stinker, 0 of 5. I still think he's a 12 team league guy. Well, it's pretty clear Mason Plumlee has the value over Trey Lyles. Lyles is not a 12 or a 14 team league guy. Plumlee probably is more 14 than 12, but he could be useful given the right situation. And that will that'll wrap it up for all the action from Sunday's games. Let's go into previewing the week ahead in the NBA, looking at the team with the best schedule and the worst schedule. The Detroit Pistons have the best schedule coming up for this week. 4 games, all against pretty good opponents fantasy-wise. They take on the Bucks, the Timberwolves, the Hornets, and the Hawks. So all of those with really fantasy-friendly opponents. You've got some options there in Detroit, like the Duck, Luke Kennard. You could look at Reggie Bullock, Reggie Jackson. These are all guys who could potentially be available, but they all get a boost with 4 games this week and solid opponents to go up against. While the Denver Nuggets have got just a 2-game week this week. They take on the Mavericks and the Clippers, the only team with 2 games. And I've got to give a quick shout-out to the Denver Nuggets president of basketball operations, Tim Connolly. The Denver Stiffs had a Nuggets and Thunder watch party down here in Melbourne. I believe it was their first international watch party. So a bunch of Melbourne Nuggets fans went along. I was there. Me and my son went along for a bit. We watched some of the game with the Denver fans there down in Melbourne. But Tim Connolly sent... Not only was there a bunch of signed merch, like a Jokic signed ball and a team signed jersey there as well, but Tim Connolly personally sent over money to be put on the bar as a tab to buy beers for the Nuggets fans watching in attendance. So that was fantastic from Tim. I shit on executives and coaches and that as well. So when they do good stuff, and I probably should do more of this, but that's a massive shout out to Tim Connolly for a fantastic effort of putting that money on the tab and shouting out the Melbourne NBA fans, especially the Melbourne Nuggets fans, some beers on a nice Saturday afternoon down here. So thank you to you, Tim, for doing that. They are your best teams of the week. Now let's have a look at the rest of the week with a bit of a preview. Week 10, I believe, in the NBA. Always get my weeks mixed up, so if I'm wrong, I apologize for that. The week breaks down this way. We've got 8 games on Monday, 4 games on Tuesday, and then a really annoying 12-game Wednesday and a 2-game Thursday. Just a really shit middle of the week there in terms of game splits. 10 games Friday, 7 games Saturday, a strange low-volume Saturday. and then an equally strange high-volume Sunday with 11 games. So our streaming days are Monday, they're Tuesday, they're Thursday, and on Saturday. They're the days we're looking to attack. There are 19 teams with four games this week, 10 teams play three games, and just the one, the Denver Nuggets, who have two games. If we're looking at teams in terms of their quality games, yeah, not all schedules are set up the same way. The Rockets, for example, the Clippers and the Mavericks all play four games, and three of those games are on streamable days, whereas the Pistons, the Nets, the Grizzlies, the Cavs, the Pacers, the Kings, the Timberwolves, the Bulls, the Blazers, they all play four games, but only one of them is on a streamable day. So you can add a Nets play and go, man, four games, that's fantastic. But in a daily changes league, you might only use Rowdy Rodian's Kurucs once. So that's not, it's nowhere near as ideal as what we'd want. And the Pistons as well, they have the best schedule, great opponents. Only one of those games, which is the one against the Bucks on Monday, comes on a low volume day. They play Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, which are high volume days, 12, 10, and 11 games on those 3 days. So tough to add those players actually into your active lineups. There are teams who have no quality games this week. The Pelicans, the Magic, the Celtics, and the Hornets all have no quality games, meaning adding players from those teams, you might not even be able to use them. So while there might be a hot pickup, like Marvin Williams of the Hornets might be someone you'd be looking at, you might be looking at one of the big men in Boston with Al Horford's knee injury, or even Marcus Smart, but are you going to be even able to use them? The answer is, in most cases, going to be most likely not. In terms of streaming guys in, Monday, Tuesday, there's no back-to-back. So we can't actually get a two-for-one there. And then we look at pseudo back-to-backs. There's only one team that has that Tuesday-Thursday pseudo back-to-back, and that's the Dallas Mavericks. So we could look at Jalen Brunson or JJ Barea. We just don't know the injury status of these guys. I'd add Dennis Smith regardless, but you might be able to get two decent games there. And then the next pseudo back-to-back we're looking at is Thursday-Saturday. And you've got the Houston Rockets who have got that combination. The Clippers have got it. The Mavericks have got it. And the Miami Heat have got it. And that's really the only sort of back-to-backs where you almost guaranteed of being able to use those players across this week in the NBA. Some players to watch who might have some value. D'Anthony Melton is someone you can pay attention to. It's going to be a little bit weird to see how Rivers and Oubre fit in, but he could have some value with the Suns having a decent enough schedule. Jordy Clarkson, Smoke and Joe Harris, Bob Portis, Thomas Satoransky, Kelly Oubre, Alec Burks, although I'm a little bit off Burks after today, Rashawn Holmes and Derek White, all those guys are a waiver wire type options who could get a bit of a boost mainly based on the way their schedule plays out for this week. All right, let's go on to DFS now, looking at the perfect lineups on DraftKings. D'Lon Wright, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Luka Doncic, Anthony Davis, DeAndre Jordan, John Wall, Bjelica, and Slammin' Sammy Decker for a total of $395, and that cost $49,900. And then on FanDuel, it was Johnny Wall, De'Aaron Fox, Caldwell-Pope, D'Lon Wright, Nemanja Bjelica, Sammy Decker, Anthony Davis, Bam Bam Adebayo, and DeAndre Jordan for a total of $418.2, and that cost the full $60,000 dues. All right, let's look at DFS now for Monday. The first one of these games, eight games, and we're going to be looking at it mainly from a FanDuel perspective today. The first game is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Detroit Pistons. No spread currently out for this one, I guess, because Chris Middleton and Malcolm Brogdon both missed the last game for the Bucks, but they're probable to play, so they should be ready to go. On the Detroit side, it's just Zaza Pachulia, who is questionable after missing the last game. If he misses, then the tackle box, John Lua, moves into his position in the rotation. It doesn't really impact much from a DFS point of view, I don't believe. Let's look at the point guards in this one. Reggie Jackson, 5,400. He's been around that 25-point mark most of this time with Ish Smith out. He is a solid yet unspectacular play. I think you'll find better point guard options out there on FanDuel than him, while Eric Bledsoe at 7,900 is a decent chunk. He has averaged 40 the last three times that he's played against the Detroit Pistons, so he is a worthy option, especially if someone like Brogdon or Middleton doesn't end up playing, but that doesn't appear like it's going to be the case. Middleton's down at 6,400 because his form has been declining. He's averaging under 24 points over the last five games. He can't really seem to get anything going. I like it as a GPP upside sort of play, but nothing more than that. While Malcolm Brogdon at 5,200 also been in a little bit of a decline after a really strong start to the season. 5,200's okay for him. I'm not sure the upside really merits a pick. While the Duck, Luke Kennard, should start again for the Pistons. He's at 4,100. Only 22 minutes last game. Foul trouble did do him in that one. I think he's a 24 to 25 point guy. So it's not a huge upside. It's not a safe floor. I'd probably end up going in a different direction to the Duck, while Reggie Bullock and Langston Galloway also at shooting guard for Detroit in that similar price range. Not much excitement with those guys. Of course, Yanni Antetokounmpo at 11,800 is always a pretty solid play, especially at that sort of a salary. He's coming off a 75-point game, so no reason to be too hesitant in using him while at power forward. I love what Blake Griffin's been doing. His lowest score in his last five is 41 points. Rock-solid consistency. He is at 9,500. I'm happy to utilize him in this matchup. Ersan Ilyasova against his former team. You could stretch that as far as you want, but I'm not really interested in him. The centers are intriguing. Brook Lopez has been putting up solid, consistent numbers. 5,600 for Brookie. He's averaged 31 in 26 minutes the last three times against the Pistons. I'm happy to go back there. The minutes are pushing up to 30 a night most nights, and that's obviously helping his value out. While Drummond's at 9,800, he is on a monster run himself, averaging 53 points in the last five. Happy to use him as well. Although against the Bucks, centers have been marginally restricted. I do think that Drummond's an option, but he has struggled in the past himself against Milwaukee, and he's had some moments of struggle against Brook Lopez back to their battles with Detroit versus Brooklyn. So that's something to bear in mind. If I'm taking a Pistons big man, I'd take Griffin. I'd take Griffin over Drummond. I'd save that $300, and that's the direction I'd go, and I'd look at Lopez as a center option. Over on DraftKings, I like the Duck at 3,500, Luke Kennard. I love Blake Griffin at 9,000, Yanni at 11,300. Reggie Jackson at 52 is okay, and much of the other stuff is very similar. 5,100 for Brook Lopez looks pretty strong as well, and the 7,600 for Eric Bledsoe comes in relatively nicely over on DraftKings. Next up, we've got the Phoenix Suns and the New York Knicks. The Knicks on a back-to-back. They are 1.5-point favorites here against the Suns. The total is 218.5. Phoenix looked obviously a lot better last game with Devin Booker. I don't think we're going to see Kelly Oubre or Austin Rivers in this game. There is a possibility the trade hasn't been finalized yet. It will likely happen Monday morning. So there's a possibility they could be available. If they are out, you're going to get bumps to De'Anthony Melton, McCall Bridges, Josh Jackson as well, who also decent enough minutes with Bridges getting the big chunk of those minutes last game. If Oubre and Rivers plays, it puts a big dark cloud on a bunch of these guys, just having no real knowledge or understanding of exactly how Kokoschkov's going to deploy these additional wing players that he got in that deal. So there is a little bit of confusion that could happen there. At point guard, you've got Emmanuel Mudiay at 6,300. He is just consistently putting up big numbers. At that $6,300 price tag against the Suns team, who is defensively challenged despite De'Anthony Melton's pretty strong defense, and he's actually raised their defensive ceiling. But depending on how many minutes they play him with Austin Rivers around, the defense may not be great. Rivers is a decent defender, though. $6,300 for Mudiay, it sounds weird to say, but it is an option. I'd probably steer a little bit clear of it on FanDuel. Especially with a $700 price rise, feels just a little bit too high for Mudiay, especially with Trey Burke back in action as well. Now, Burke played in today's game, didn't do too much, but there is always that Fizdale concern as how he's going to run that rotation. In Phoenix, Melton at 5,700, I think that's too high. He played only 21 minutes in Saturday's game, and the traded players hadn't arrived yet. That was with Booker back, so that gives me an element of concern. If they marginalize Melton to play Austin Rivers, I'll be pretty pissed, but I think that's definitely on the cards, and that price for Melton at 5,700 is just too high to experiment with. 6,900 for Tim Hardaway.
Giggity!
Yeah, I like it. I love the matchup for Tim. He had a strong game on Sunday, back-to-back there. He is their one real consistent option, so I'm happy to utilize him. Devin Booker, on the other hand, at 8,400, is obviously priced a little bit more expensive, but we know what Booker's going to do. He dropped 45 in his game back from hamstring injury. No worries with Booker. I think he's a strong mid-to-high-priced sort of a player. Damo Dotson, also questionable for the Knicks, missing the last couple. He's at 3,900, really only tournaments for Dotto. As for Rivers and Crawford, Rivers actually isn't even on the slate for FanDuel, so I think we can leave him alone. While Crawford's at 4,000, no. Small forward, Tony Warren Jr., 6,800. He is absolutely rock solid at the moment, doing everything he needs to do. I don't think any of these guys coming across are going to take much away from Warren. Happy to go with him. I think he's a strong play. While McCall Bridges had 35 points in 40 minutes on Saturday, at 4,600, I'd be happy to go with him, especially in a really positive matchup. if Oubre and Rivers aren't playing. But if they are playing, I really worry about how much playing time Bridges is going to end up getting. Oubre, like Rivers, isn't on the slate either. Noah Vonleh at 5,500 is just consistently giving you enough there, so I think he is a strong, strong cash play. While Rashawn Holmes at 5,000 has been under that number the last three, just a 22-point average over those last three. He's a little bit hit or miss. I just worry that you can't use him in cash because of the up and down nature of the playing time that he gets. While the Fort Kevin Knox is up to 6,900. That's a very, very big amount for Knoxy. He's scoring okay. He's doing a little bit of other things. He's okay, but I think that price might be like $1,000 too high. But I also don't dislike it. He's averaging 38 over the last three. Happy to go with Knox. I feel like he, along with Tim Hardaway, their role feels the most secure on the Knicks at this point. Josh Jackson's at 5,600, only 23 minutes last game without Oubre there. That's definitely a worrying sign. He continues to be one of the worst players in the NBA. At 5,600, I think you can pass on him. At center is where it's really at. We know that centers against the Suns really go off. 7,000 for Enes Kanter. He should have a 30-plus point performance his way. While DeAndre Ayton at 7,400. The minutes have been down for Ayton, averaging just 28 over the last five. I'd only be considering tournaments, but centers against the Knicks is also a huge boost, so he would be in play. While Mitchell Robinson is questionable, he missed Sunday's game with that ankle injury, and we'll see if he gets to go. If he is out, then Luke Kornet would be the guy to take those backup center minutes. On DraftKings, Hardaway and Kanter are the two I really like there. The Fort at 5,700 is really hard to go past, as is Vonleh at 5,500. Oubre and Rivers are included on the slate over on DraftKings, so there is that. 4,000 for Oubre would be a weird tournament sort of a play. I wouldn't be super keen on it. And the 6,700 for TJ Warren is probably a little bit high on DraftKings, to be honest. Not as favorable as how it looks on FanDuel. All right, let's move on to the next game. It is the Sacramento Kings taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Wolves are favored by 8 points, and the total is 231.5 here. Taj Gibson missed last game for personal reasons. He's not on the injury report, so he should be ready to go. At point guard, you're looking at Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
6,600 for Teague. He's had a really good record against Sacramento, averaging almost 37 points the last three times out. Happy to go with him here. It's a strong spot. While Derrick Rose at 6,100 is giving us a consistent 30-9. And while Robert Covington continues to be limited by his knee, I think Rose is a solid play at that sort of a salary. De'Aaron Fox, 7,500. He is absolutely crushing it, averaging 43 over his last five. Now, he has struggled against the Wolves in the past. Some of that was last season where he wasn't as good as what he is this season. So I'm happy to go back with Fox at that sort of a salary. Wigo is at 6,300. Andrew Wiggins, he is playing with a solid floor, 26 points over the last five, which is okay. Relatively consistent at the moment, which is not something we've really been able to say about him. But I feel like 6,300 might be just marginally elevated. While Bogdan Bogdanovic is in play here for sure. 6,100 is getting 30 minutes a night. Happy to go with Bogdan. Budrick Hield at 6,400 as well. I'd much rather take Bogdanovic than Hield at this spot, and we need to check about Iman Shumpert. He didn't play Sunday with his hip injury. I'd imagine he would sit out Monday as well, but that's yet to be confirmed. At small forward, Covington's at 5,600. The price is dropping significantly because he just doesn't look right. He looks hobbled with that knee. That does make him an interesting tournament guy, but he's averaging just 18 points over the last three games. Nowhere near where we've seen what Covington was doing earlier in the season or earlier straight after the trade. So I think that he is a GPP sort of a guy, but not much more than that. Bielitsa at 5,200 with Marvin Bagley sidelined. I think that's a strong cash play for Bielitsa. You should be able to get that value pretty comfortably. The power forwards, Šarić is at 5,300, and his averages look really good. He's averaging 30 points over the last three, but last game Taj was out. That boosted his playing time. But in the two previous games, he'd played about 30 minutes while Gibson was getting 17. So the needle is pushing towards Šarić. FanDuel's bumped his salary up by $1,000, but if he gets 30, then he beats that number pretty comfortably. So I do think that Šarić is in play here. I don't think he's the strongest play, but he is an option. And then at center, Karl-Anthony Towns at 10,200. I really like Towns here. He's done very well against Willie Cauley-Stein in the past, and happy for him to get another 55-plus performance. Cauley-Stein at 7,100. I think there are better ways around filling your center spot than doing it with Will Cauley-Stein. On DraftKings, it's Tegan Bialica who I really like here. Townsie at 10,000 is strong. Fox is also strong. And Šarić, I love Šarić at 4,900. And Covington again with that GPP option at 5,200. The next game we look at, we've got the Chicago Bulls and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by a whopping 13 points, and the total is 213.5. The Bulls actually beat the Thunder the last time out. Zach LaVine is unlikely to play in this game with that ankle injury. Probably needs a few more wind sprints, I'd say, so he can get rid of the softness of missing games due to ankle problems. Chris Dunn, 7,200. FanDuel reacted savagely to his 42-point performance last time, and they bumped him $1,800 up to $7,200. That is a huge, huge jump. Now, with LaVine out, Dunn's going to get a usage spike. So I do think that he is okay to look at, but that is a pretty aggressive jump in salary. While I love Westbrook here at 11,600, he should be good for 55 almost as a minimum, and it pushed to 65 max. So his numbers have been a little bit down this season as opposed to his peak. With LaVine out, Ryan Arcicakano dropped 33 and 39 minutes last game. But of course, we're not relying on Arcicakano to do that, because we saw when Dunn was out, he'd have these games and then he'd put up 2 points. So he is a GPP sort of an option with that obvious upside there. But realizing that upside is not always the easiest thing for him to do. The shooting guards, I like Schroeder at 5,900. His last couple of games have been a little bit down, but nothing like playing the Bulls to get yourself back on track. Well, Justin Holiday's minutes are through the roof. He's at 5,800. He's not really a great DFS sort of a player, averaging just 25 over his last five. If anything, he'd be a tournament guy. That's about it. While the shooting guards in Oklahoma City, Terry Ferguson, MC Hamadou Diallo, Alex Abrines, I don't think we need to care about those players. Paul George at 9,800 is one of the hottest players in the NBA at the moment. He's averaging about 50 over the last five. That is a pretty rock-solid floor for Paulie. Happy with him. While Chandler Hutchison, the other small forward, no thank you. Lauri Markkanen dropped 43 against the Spurs. $7,000 is a significant upgrade in price, $600 higher than where he was last game. Not certain, but with LaVine out, the usage should go towards him and towards Chris Dunn, as I mentioned earlier, and that can really help Markkanen. But his efficiency has been shaky so far this season, and that could really hurt That could really hurt his value in this game. I'm not super into Markkanen here. Jeremy Grant, Wendell Carter Jr. on FanDuel, I think they're both a little bit too highly priced. Although Grant is a big man against the Bulls, that's a real bonus. And he would be the option out of those two guys that I would consider. While PunchBob Shiploke, Bob Portis at 53 is really a tournament guy only. Steve Adams at 73, happy to go with Adams. I love big men against the Bulls, and Adams is a big man playing against the Bulls, so that should work out in his favor. While Robin Lopez is the only other center worth noting, and I don't even know that he was worth noting. On DraftKings, I like Grant and Dunn and Schroeder and Westbrook. I think they're all cash options. Wendell Carter at 48 is very, very cheap on DraftKings, but of course, his form and his minutes have been trending way down. 4,800 would make him a GPP-only sort of a player over on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next one. We're looking at the Utah Jazz and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are 5-point favorites. The total is 214.5. Will we get some more of that Dante Exum on James Harden magic that we've seen over the last couple of battles? At point guard, Chris Paul is at 8,100. Injury-wise, nothing for us to really talk about. Jim Ennis is out for Houston. The Jazz have got an all-clear injury report. Now, Paul at 8,100, the shots just aren't falling, but even though they're not falling, he's still averaging 39 over the last three. So if the shots do fall, then he is a 50-point type of a guy, and that makes him a tournament player. Ricky Rubio, the Ravishing One at 6,300, is probably a little bit high in my opinion. While shooting guards, we've got Eric Gordon. I just can't get into Eric Gordon. He's doing absolutely nothing at the moment, struggling a lot. While Donovan Mitchell, the Don, at 7,500, probably a little bit overpriced as well. But I don't hate Mitchell. He's clearly got that 50-point upside in him. So there is something there. Jimmy Harden at 11,700. He has really struggled against the Jazz, averaging under 37 points the last three times out. That's a concern. I'd be happy to go back to Harden. Now, I'm not sure that the Jazz are the only team in the NBA who's got him figured out, even though they do defend him probably better than anyone else. I'd still be happy to go back to James Harden here, despite that issue. Jingling Joe Ingles at 5,800. He's been a little bit down this season, no doubt about that, but I do think that he can be an okay cash player there. Jay Crowder, who I imagine will start for Utah, over Derek Favors. That doesn't make him all that appealing, but the 4,200 price tag would put him into GPP play, especially if he starts over Favors. And then you got the Daniel House, Gerald Green combination at small forward. One of those guys is likely to see a lot of minutes. I wouldn't put them both in the same lineup. They'd be tournament guys, and you could alternate them in different lineups and see how that works out. At power forward, you got Favors at 5,800. He is a very low upside guy, but he gives you about 28 a night, which at 5,800 is not a bad result on FanDuel. So I think you can consider him for cash, but that's really about it. While at center, Gobert at 8,200 has struggled against the Rockets. I'd leave him alone. While Capella at 9,000, I think that's too high. Now, he does okay against Gobert. I just think that salary is probably just a little bit high for old Clint. On DraftKings, I like Harden at 10.9. That's a good price reduction there. And Chris Paul and Don Mitchell have some nice GPP upside as well. And Eric Gordon, much like on FanDuel, I'd only be considering him a tournament guy and really very little else. The next game we look at is the Philadelphia 76ers and the San Antonio Spurs. No spread at the moment. I guess Vegas was waiting to see if Jimmy Butler would play. He played Sunday. No indication whether he's going to rest in this game as he returns from that groin issue. Point guards, Derek White at 4,400. He started the last few games. The last game wasn't great for him against the Bulls, just 3.5 points. He'd only be a tournament guy. Well, Ben Simmons is on a roll now. His salary is at 9,700, so it's expensive. But he's averaging 51 over the last three, and that includes some games with general soreness and some games without the general. He's been putting up consistent numbers, triple-doubled on Sunday as well. Yeah, pretty good numbers for Simo, and I think he is worth a look at that salary. Bryn Forbes, Patty Mills, TJ McConnell. McConnell's value disappears with Butler back. JJ Redick's at 57. That's too high in my opinion. DeRozan at 8,700. Nowhere near where he needs to be at that salary. And Butler at 76. I'd much rather take Jim Butler at 7,600 than DeRozan at 87 personally. For the small forwards, Baby Neck Wilson Chandler's at 3,900. He had a strong game in the last one. 27 points there, but I wouldn't be really utilizing him. While Rudy Gay is on a strong run, but that $6,300 price tag on FanDuel turns me off a little bit, but I still like him for cash. I'd have him easily over, say, Wilson Chandler. The power forwards, LaMarcus Aldridge, 8,500, hasn't really quite been living up to that billing. He's had his struggles. 48 points against the Chicago Bulls is obviously impressive, but this is not the Chicago Bulls. So that's I guess, a detraction for what he is able to do. I still think that he is in play, but I wouldn't have him as one of the strong options around or anything along those lines. And then at center, Embiid's at 11-4, only the 38 points today, limited minutes. There is a chance he gets limited a little bit in this one as well. I think 11-4 would make him more of a tournament option. Poeltl is the Spurs center option there, and I don't think he is really worth utilizing. On DraftKings, I like Embiid at 10-6, Simmons at 8-9, look pretty good as well. Not much else really standing out. The 61 for Rudy Gay is okay, but overall, that game doesn't really stand out with huge value plays all over it or anything along those lines. The next one, we look at the Portland Trail Blazers and the LA Clippers. The Blazers are... They're not favorites, sorry. The Clippers are favored by 2.5, and the total is 219. The Clippers are struggling at the moment. They were that number one seed in the West a couple of weeks ago. They are falling off pretty rapidly at the moment. Injury-wise, we know that Luke Marmute and Jerome Robinson, as well as Lou Williams, are out for the Clippers. And Portland, no real injuries to speak of. Patrick Beverley's at 4,500. A strong game from Beverley last time, but it still just resulted in 21 FanDuel points. I think he's more of a tournament guy, while Gilgeous Alexander is just GPPs, who is struggling at the moment. While Lillard at 8,800. That's a very nice price for Damian Lillard. You don't see that very often, but there's a reason. He's averaging under 39 over his last five games. That would make him an interesting tournament one, but not a must roster guy. At shooting guard, Avery Bradley, no, I just can't get behind what he does. CJ McCollum at 7,500 is a bit up and down. I don't hate CJ here. I think this matchup could work in his favor. But he's still not a strong play. Mo Harkless at 41 would be a tournament guy. While I do like the Rooster, Danilo Gallinari at 7,100, I do think there's value in looking at him. His teammate Tobias Harris at 7,700, I think, is also a strong cash play with real 50-point upside, while the table Montrezl Harrell got back on track last game. But at 6,200, with the way that he has been sort of really up and down and not feeling, we haven't been seeing as good a production from him as what we would have hoped. I think he'd only be a tournament player, while the chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
He's at 5,100, putting up consistent category league, seasonal league type numbers. The DFS stuff for 5,100 hasn't quite been at that level, and this matchup is the only thing that would lead me towards Aminu, which is a positive one for him and power forwards. The Clippers have been quite susceptible to power forwards this season. That would be the only thing that would lean me towards using Aminu. The centers, Yusuf Nurkic at 8,100. He has been really solid. I like him in this one. I think he's a cash play. I think he's a tournament play. Gortat, Boban, yeah, I don't think we can really rely upon those guys for the Clippers. On DraftKings, I like quite a few guys here. Beverly, Harrell, Harris, Gallinari, Nurkic. I think Shea is a GPP guy. I think Aminu at 4,700 also has value across both formats. The last game of Monday, we're looking at the Memphis Grizzlies and the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are favored by 11.5, and the total is 210.5, so a real blowout risk here for this game. Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston are both probable for Memphis. Kyle Anderson is questionable. Now, with Anderson out last game, Shelvin Mack started. I'd expect that to happen again. And then you had Javon Carter move into the rotation to take those minutes. At point guard, I love Steph Curry here, 9,600. He should be good for 45, which is a really strong floor in at that sort of a salary. And then Conley at 85 has struggled against Golden State, no doubt about that. But he has been rock solid this season, super consistent. Lower score is just 30 over his last five. Happy to use Conley at 8,500 as well. Clay's at 6,800, and he's been putting up good numbers, 35 a night. That's relatively strong. I still have my concerns with his consistency. This is a negative matchup for shooting guards as well, so I think Clay would be more of a tournament player. Garrett Temple, Iguodala, no. Small forward, Kevin Durant at 10,000. Yeah, that's solid for cash. We know that. I'm not sure his upside's all that high, to be honest, given the way the Warriors are running at the moment, but I do think that he's worth looking at. While Kyle Anderson has had a fantastic record against the Warriors, some of that as a member of the Spurs, but with the uncertainty with his ankle, I don't think you could really look at anything more than a tournament. And even then, I'm not sure the upside's high enough to utilize it. Draymond's at 68, 31 average over the last three. It just doesn't feel like he's got that real upwards explosibility, which of course is not a word, but I think you know what I mean. On the other side, Jermichael Green, 5,100, has been around a 22, 23 point a guy, a night sort of a guy. More of a tournament guy in case Jackson gets in foul trouble. And Jackson himself at 69.
Giggity!
He has stayed out of relative foul trouble recently, averaging 30 over his last three, but still, I think we can only be looking at him as a tournament player. At centre, Looney's at 43, I'd pass there, while Marc Gasol at 85. I hate the price and I hate the matchup for Gasol here. I think that's just too high for both of those things, or too hard and too high for Marc Gasol against the Warriors. On DraftKings, Gasol at 76 is more in play because of how much cheaper it is, but it's still just for tournaments. I like Conley a lot at 79. Clay at 64 looks pretty good, as well as Durant at 9.7. Durant at 9.7 comes in cheaper than Steph over on DraftKings. All right, that'll wrap it up. And then we go through the studs and the value plays. You've got on DraftKings, Blake Griffin is my stud play there. My value play is Patrick Beverley. My stud on FanDuel is Mike Conley, and my value play is Tim Hardaway. My stud on Yahoo is Westbrook, and my value play is Jermichael Green. And on DraftStars, my stud is Blake Griffin, and my value play over there is Enes Kanter. That'll wrap it up for today's shows, guys. Make sure you are subscribing to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Make sure you don't miss any of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Fast Break podcasts. I did a waiver wire one earlier in the day and a full breakdown of the Ariza Oubre trade across the weekend. The only way to make sure you don't miss those is to subscribe to the show. And on YouTube, you can subscribe, hit the notification bell, and give a thumbs up and leave a comment. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Dave Yeager.